Welcome to Medical Progress Today's Innovative Ideas series. My name is Paul Howard, and I'm the director of the Center for Medical Progress at the Manhattan Institute for Policy Research. The Innovative Ideas series is a collection of podcast interviews that I'll be conducting with doctors, scientists, health economists, and policy experts to get their thoughts on how we should reform our healthcare system in a way that promotes innovation, competition, and more affordable health insurance options. My guest today is Evan Falchuk, president of Best Doctors, a Boston-based firm that offers an employee benefit that allows beneficiaries with a serious illness to seek advice on their diagnosis and treatment from some of the world's leading medical experts. Evan, thanks for agreeing to join us today.
Glad to be here.
Let me start by reading a short paragraph from an author that I'm sure we're both familiar with, Atul Gawande from The New Yorker.
Yes.
Dr. Gawande is a surgeon at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston who also happens to be an enormously talented writer at The New Yorker. In his book of collected essays, Better, Gawande has a fantastic chapter on something the medical profession doesn't like to advertise, at least in the lay press, and that is how widely treatment and therefore outcomes can vary for patients based on the quality of the treating physician. Gawande writes, "It used to be assumed that differences among hospitals or doctors in a particular specialty were generally insignificant. If you plotted a graph showing the results of all the centers treating cystic fibrosis, or any other disease for that matter, people expected that the curve would look something like a shark fin, with most places clustered around the very best outcomes. But the evidence has begun to indicate otherwise. What you tend to find is a bell curve, with a handful of teams showing disturbingly poor outcomes for their patients, and a handful obtaining remarkably good results, and a great undistinguished middle." End quote. This suggests that there's a gap between what the best physicians are accomplishing at the margins and what their peers, who are all very well-meaning and well-trained and think they're following guidelines, are doing for their patients. Best Doctors is, I think, trying to move patients to the right-hand side of the bell curve where those better and best outcomes are. Could you discuss for a minute, Evan, how Best Doctors does that?
Sure. And one thing I'll say, you know, just at the outset is that healthcare is a very funny thing because in any other walk of life, if you took a general population of people, you would expect that they would fall along a bell curve. And there's something funny about healthcare where we have this perception that those rules don't apply and that, you know, the fact that there's normal variation among people is it doesn't exist in medicine. And the truth is that doctors, and I can say this from personal experience, doctors are people just like the rest of us. And there is, you know, there are the same sorts of variations and the ability of each one of them to do their job as there is among any of us to do our job. And that's a very important thing to recognize.
But I think part of that perception stems from the fact that we think medicine is a science in the sense that there are rules that should be followed that decrease variation. But as you've just pointed out, there is an art and a craft, and there is tremendous variation because we are human beings dealing with enormously complex
Absolutely.
Medical topics.
I mean, look, a patient with one disease is not exactly the same as another patient with the same disease. And doctors know that. And, you know, one of the challenges that's out there is we have a healthcare system that is set up in a way that makes it very difficult for doctors to spend the amount of time they need to think about those variations and to say, listen, yes, I've learned a lot of science as a physician and I have a lot of experience as a doctor, and, you know, I need to be able to think and bring that to bear on the person who's sitting in front of me. And it isn't like a factory assembly line kind of process. It requires thought and judgment and intelligence. And our system doesn't really emphasize those things, unfortunately.
That's right. It doesn't reward the mental, conceptual component
Indeed.
Of medicine.
Yep, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
So how has Best Doctors tried to get or address that problem, get beyond that problem, address it?
So, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, we're an employee benefit. So people call us when they're feeling unsure about their medical situation. And it's a very common problem. I mean, we see, you know, very large percentages of people that call us and say, listen, I've been told I've got multiple options of what to do, or I've been told that this is what I have, but I'm not really comfortable, or, you know, I had 15 minutes with my doctor and I have all these questions and I can't figure out where to answer them. Well, when they call us, what we do is we collect all their medical information, and we have doctors that will literally spend hours reviewing it all, figuring out what the important questions really are in that patient's case, and then consulting with a leading expert in the problem, and giving that information then back to the member and to their physician. But the key thing we're doing is spending time and allowing the doctors who are looking at that information to use their judgment. And there's lots of data out there. There was that, I think last year, the National Ambulatory Care Survey that showed that the majority of doctor visits are on average less than 15 minutes with the physician. And you just can't in that time frame get that insight that you really need when you're sick. And so what we try to do is give that time, make that time available through through this sort of process, and by doing it, be able to really get clarity on what's wrong and lead to those good outcomes that everybody wants to have.
Just to follow up on what you just said for a moment, is it the reimbursement system, at least in the area of, for instance, primary care, that drives physicians to, or forces physicians to be in the position of, to make their ends meet and cover their costs, they have to see more patients per day?
Right. Look, you got to pay a big medical malpractice premium. You've got insurance companies that are paying less and less for primary care visits to try to control costs. And so you're under this enormous amount of pressure to see 20, 30 patients a day. And how long can you spend with each one? And all of us know, we've been to the doctor, you know, you end up waiting a long time in the waiting room because they try to spend more time with certain patients, and you end up being clipped and rushed. A lot of it has to do with the reimbursement system, and a lot of it is driven by the fact that, you know, we live not just in this country, but every place in this world in which costs keep going up, and the strategies to control that are having this impact on the actual delivery of care.
So there's the reimbursement question. We'll circle back to that in a minute. Could you talk for a second about this issue of quality in medicine? And as you just said, there's a conceptual component, there's the ability of doctors and physicians in very smart environments to sit down and perhaps spend time with teams of colleagues talking about a particularly complex problem, the way that your team tries to do. In other industries, granting that you're absolutely right, that human biology is much more complex than even, say, you know, a very complex car or a computer, but is there a way that we can try to get towards more of the quality that these other industries have through competition and through transparency to consumers in terms of what the product they're getting or what quality is that they're buying,
right,
that would allow the market to leverage some of these outcomes at the margins and learn from them in a way that perhaps we're not doing now?
Well, I mean, it's in theory, absolutely. I mean, it should happen, but there's a big difference between a car and medicine. You know, when you're in a good quality car, you can, you know, you can measure it in certain very definable ways. Does the powertrain work? Do pieces fall off of it? Does it, you know, the door slam shut with a nice sound to it? You know, in medicine, quality is very difficult to measure. And the things that people are trying to do to measure quality right now are somewhat detached from the reality of what it means to be sick. Let me be very specific about it. You know, if you go and look, if you go to a website of a major hospital and look at quality measures, they're very focused on things like hand washing, errors that take place in the hospital, the amount of surgeries of a certain kind they do, which are interesting pieces of information, but they don't tell you what you really care about when you're sick, which is, did they correctly diagnose me? Did they give me the right treatment? We had a case of a guy recently who had been told he had a spinal cord tumor and was going to be operated on, which is the right type of procedure to do on a person with a spinal cord tumor. He called us, and we found out that he actually had a vascular malformation, which has not a tumor, but a completely different approach to dealing with the problem. So he got really, in my view, poor quality care by being diagnosed with a tumor when he didn't have one, okay, even though what they were going to do is to follow the right protocol for dealing with the tumor. And yet the measures that are used to define quality are completely detached from that reality of what it means to be a patient. So if there was a way to get that information out there, how well do doctors do at correctly diagnosing and treating patients, then you could have that kind of marketplace that we want to have where people can make those decisions. But it's very difficult to measure that in a way that is going to be acceptable to a lot of different people. But that really is the quality dilemma.
And just to step back for another second, so we were talking before about reimbursement. What role does insurance play in making it, as we said before, can be very problematic because the reimbursements doctors see many, many patients. So that they ration their access through time. They just have a few minutes to spend with each patient to get to that reimbursement level that allows them to recoup all of their cost, administrative overhead, malpractice insurance, as you said. Americans have a real, I think, attachment to the idea of having a doctor, keeping the doctors they like or they trust, even as we just discussed, when it's very hard to tell really who the best doctors are, who the good doctors are. You use a peer review system. There was a rebellion against HMOs in the 1990s just because of people didn't feel like they could get access to the doctors, the hospitals they wanted. But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that your model suggests this is something we need to think about differently. Look, if you live next to MD Anderson and you have cancer, that's very fortuitous. But at the same time, really it's the quality of the diagnosis and treatment you get that's the thing you really need to be worrying about, not so much the network that you're in.
That's correct.
How can we move the insurance model perhaps in more in that direction?
It's a very difficult problem. I mean, I personally feel that because as best doctors, we're doing business in 30 different countries around the world. So we're seeing this from the perspective of patients living underneath every imaginable healthcare system. you know, from the fully socialized system like they have in Canada to the kind of very wide open systems like you see in Latin America and the mixed systems in Europe and, of course, the United States. Patients face the same problems. You know, when you're sick, you got to make sure you get the right diagnosis and treatment, and it's independent of how their health care is paid for. In our country, we have this fixation on how it gets paid for as the focus of quality, of reform, and of everything else. But in reality, the issue in healthcare has to do with what happens to the actual patient when they're sick. And I think of it as, you know, if you're actually ill, you don't need a congressional hearing and some sort of different funding mechanism, you know, employer-based versus non-employer-based versus, you know, formularies for drugs and all this kind of stuff. You just need to get the right diagnosis and treatment. And the system should be fixated on that problem, not on the particular mechanism of reimbursement. So, you know, I've seen people get enormously high quality care at hospitals in Winnipeg, in Canada, where, you know, you would never think that that was a place where you could do that, but because the doctors did the right thing. And I've also seen patients at wonderful places like MD Anderson, which are among the best in the world at cancer, have the wrong diagnosis and the wrong treatment. So it really is a question of when you're sick, what goes on between you and your physician, and do you get to that right outcome that you need when you're ill, not about how does it get paid for.
Right. We're obsessed with, did you follow the guideline, or, mm-hmm. you know, how does this get paid for? But really the question is the quality of care that the patient's getting. And I guess it does need intermediaries like you, because obviously the average patient can't sit down and say, well, there's an expert in France maybe that I need to talk to, or
right.
somewhere else. Is it also a competition issue that it's harder for intermediaries to operate in this market? Is there some aspect of deregulation or a different way that we could allow more competition at that level of the market?
You mean in terms of the physicians?
Well, in terms of, correct me if I'm wrong, you can offer your insurance services in Canada, but you've decided not to in the U.S. for some reasons, or is that
well, I mean, in the U.S. we have a really difficult regulatory environment. I mean, we've got 50 state regulators, I guess 51 if you include the District of Columbia, that get to decide who gets to sell what insurance where, and they get to even mandate what goes into those products. I mean, you know, in some states, they say that as much as a quarter of the premium you pay is to cover state-mandated benefits. So you really don't have a competitive marketplace for health insurance, and you have a very limited ability to see new, dynamic, innovative, market-based models for...
Or insurance design. It may
be
that in a national market, and we're hypothesizing here because we don't have one, that I would turn to someone like a Best Doctor and say, help me shop around.
Right.
And then we would perhaps get some of these better quality competition issues addressed.
That's right. That's right. You'd certainly see more innovation, that's for sure. Look, many of the big insurance companies end up acting more like regulated utilities than highly competitive organizations. We've got, without question, the best doctors and the best technology and the best medical education in the world here in the United States. But it's sort of attached to the somewhat antiquated, you know, funding system, you know, healthcare financing system, undermines all the great things we have.
As you said, Best Doctors operates in about 30 countries around the globe. So from your perspective, everyone's struggling with the same challenges. Is that right?
Indeed. Yep. It's masked more in countries that have government-run systems because it's sort of buried in their national budgets, whereas in America, you know, employers bear the brunt and individuals bear the brunt, so it's a much more front-of-mind issue. But it doesn't mean that these issues don't exist. They're just dealt with in different ways in the different countries.
And if it's not transparent in a country abroad, whether it's the UK or someone else, but what the outcomes are, you don't know where the problems are in that system.
That's right.
Where do you think we're going with, if you could just muse for a moment, on healthcare reform and what kind of changes, you know, perhaps would you think would help the system do what it should be doing better, which is take better care of patients?
Right. It's such a broad issue, healthcare reform. And, you know, I read about it every day. And, you know, there's stuff going on in Washington, D.C. There's enormously interesting things happening at different states across the country, like what we did here in Massachusetts, but also in states like Utah, which is creating a way for people to get innovative insurance products through the internet or other places where they're trying other mechanisms for this. It's such a broad, enormous topic that, you know, you read the word reform and it means to the person who wrote it something different from the next guy who writes the word reform. So my guess is that there's going to be some big, heavy piece of legislation that will end up being passed by the Congress, and the president will sign it, and everyone will be very pleased that we've done something to reform healthcare, and then for the average, you know, citizen, it'll be sort of like the life goes on, and it won't be really clear exactly what change, you know, took place. But I think that's a reality of the fact that it's such an enormously complicated issue, and there is no real consensus about what we want to do, so we'll end up with just something that satisfies a number of smaller, you know, a number of different constituencies, but doesn't necessarily transform our system.
And then we'll spend the next 10 or 15 years trying to figure out exactly what we just did.
What we just did. So again, it always comes down to you as a patient, you as a as an individual, got to take care of yourself and make sure you've got good insurance, make sure you have a good, you know, sense of your own personal medical history, and then if you do get sick, make sure you really advocate for yourself, ask the questions you need to ask, just that people pay attention to you and you know, seek help where you can find it.
And that at least is one good aspect of the world that we're living in right now. The internet is a great leveling tool
mm-hmm.
for patients who want to become more educated about their own healthcare. And at the
right.
end of the day, it may be that you can be more in touch with what the latest research is on your specific disease than your doctor, who may be the most harried, overworked person in the world
right.
at that moment.
Well, and your doctor may have tremendous insight, and the, you know, the internet is good and it's bad, because the internet, you know, your doctor may be focused on what you have because he knows what you have, and you're coming with all this stuff printed out on the internet, and it's hard for him because he's saying, well, yeah, I know, I've considered that, but that isn't your situation. But where it becomes hard as a patient and as a doctor is when he really only has 10 or 15 minutes he can really spend with you. It becomes very, you know, you end up feeling as a patient like he's not paying attention to me, and it's very difficult. So that's where you do have to make sure you're using whatever resources are available, and going and getting a second opinion from another doctor is nothing to be ashamed of, and you know, talking to anybody you can talk to is a good thing,
and people should do it. Becoming as empowered as possible.
Absolutely.
One of the ways you can do that in the market is with Best Doctors, and I believe that they can reach you at your website, www.bestdoctors.com.
Great place to go visit.
Thank you very much, Evan. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks.